It's Thursday, September 26th. From KLCC News, this is the Northwest Passage. Oregon pushes forward with an action plan on climate change. Classified staff at the state's public universities prepare to go on strike. And scientific evidence shows cats actually can form bonds with people. These stories and more in this edition of the Northwest Passage podcast.
Support for the Northwest Passage comes from Columbia Bank, member FDIC.
Everybody, thanks for joining us for KLCC's Northwest Passage. I'm News Director Rachel McDonald.
I'm Morning Edition host Ani Katz.
And I'm News Reporter Brian Bull.
So, Ani, we've had a busy news week both nationally and right here in Oregon. Can you tell us some of the stories that you've been paying attention to this week?
Let's go back to the beginning of the week when we heard that very emotional testimony from Greta Thunberg, the Swedish teen who traveled over the ocean on a sailboat to testify at the UN climate conference. A new report that came out also this week gives a dire outlook for the world's oceans and ice caps unless something is done about global warming. In the face of the bleak news, Oregon is actually going ahead with a plan to deal with climate change locally. The plan calls for funding to boost research about ocean acidification and low oxygen conditions along the coast. And more importantly, this comes with grants for coastal communities as they deal with the effects of climate change. We've talked about how it specifically does affect the Pacific Northwest. We had that blob several years ago, which is now kind of making a reappearance both here and then in other parts of the world. And so it does affect our coastal areas.
And that blob is basically a big area of warmer water.
It's like
water
a heat wave in the water.
In the ocean.
Yeah, wow. Which is obviously very bad for the things that live in the ocean, from coral to fish to mammals. So now Oregon is kind of taking a step away from United States policy and making decisions of their own. So moving on, we had some big strike news this week. Actually, two different stories about strikes. The healthcare provider, Kaiser Permanente, has actually reached an agreement with its employee unions after nearly 5 months of bargaining and threats of strikes. The four-year collective bargaining agreement will cover 85,000 employees in 11 local unions. This includes 8,300 employees in Oregon and Washington. Workers had threatened to strike next month, but they came to an agreement on wage increases, opportunities for career improvement, and restrictions on outsourcing jobs. And then we come to our next strike story, which has not resolved yet as of the time that we're recording this on Thursday. KLCC's Aubrey Bulkley did some reporting on the talks that broke down on Monday of this week in negotiations between management and classified staff at Oregon's public universities.
And I understand if they do go on strike, it would be on Monday, which is the day before classes start at the University of Oregon and I believe the other public universities in the state.
Exactly. So this week has been kind of move in to the dorms and apartments week. As people in college towns may have noticed, there's some increased traffic in those areas. But yes, if they don't come to an agreement, a strike could start next Monday. The impasse is over salary increases for topped out employees and cost of living adjustments across the board. 95% of union members voted to strike next week if necessary. So we're still kind of following that story, and we're going to wait and see what happens on Monday.
Yeah, and it may mean that students will have to cross picket lines to get to class.
Exactly. So these aren't teachers, we should add, or professors. These are the classified staff. So this means everything from the groundskeepers to support staff, IT staff. So it's a lot of people. We had some big news that involves Oregon, but it happened on the national level earlier this week. The U.S. House passed a landmark bill that should alleviate some major restrictions in the legal cannabis industry. The vote wasn't close. A lot of Republicans voted for it, 321 to 103. The Safe Banking Act would provide regulatory protections for banks and other financial institutions that provide services to marijuana businesses that operate in states where it's legal.
It sounds like this could be a boon for Oregon's marijuana industry because aren't most dispensaries cash only?
Right. So currently, most banks don't work with marijuana-related businesses, mostly because the drug is still illegal under federal law. That forces a lot of cannabis firms to deal in sometimes huge cash transactions. These can be in the high six figures. This makes cannabis businesses a target for theft, fraud, and money laundering, because what do you do with all that cash? And that's according to Congressman Earl Blumenauer. The bill now moves to the Senate, where it actually does face uncertain prospects. So no word yet on how that's going to fall, but it was big news that the House passed it. And finally, Gustavo Balderas was a guest on Think Out Loud earlier this week because he has been named the superintendent of the year in Oregon. He's the superintendent of the Eugene School District. He grew up in eastern Oregon. He was the child of migrant farm workers. Balderas is actively working to diversify 4J's faculty and administration, basically to make sure it more closely matches the diverse student body.
Here's Balderas when he spoke earlier this week on KLCC.
To try and get more people working in school districts that look like the kids that they're working with. And that's something that we've pressed here in Eugene, where our principal group, for example, as this year, we're close to 40% of our principals in our schools, our 32 campuses, are principals of color. And that's something we're very proud of, and that was really intentional.
So, Brian, what have you been up to this week?
So it looks like I was on the cat beat this week. First, I revisited a story I've been tracking since early August. That's Cassandra Riley, who identified herself to me as the daughter-in-law of a property owner whose homestead outside Veneta was home to, I guess you could call it, a kitty population explosion. When I first met her, she was treating and feeding the animals largely by herself, save for a few visiting animal welfare advocates. Initial estimates said 400 cats, though some on-site relief workers now think that's a bit overblown. Still, even 300 or so cats is a lot, so a group called Alley Cats Allies is now on site to help.
Thanks for the background, Brian. What's the latest?
So right now, out of that guesstimated 300, 400 cats, about 70 have been sent to Green Hill Humane Society through Alley Cat Allies Trap, Neuter, and Release Program. I visited with Green Hill Representative Megan Brezovar, who showed me a couple of the Veneta rescues.
Right now we have Gidget in front of us. She's a beautiful black cat. She's 3 years old, and she's still under observation right now on some medication, just getting her health back up to par so we can adopt her out and help her find her forever home. We have Rudy. He's a sweet 9-year-old boy. It's hard to believe that he's been living outside for 9 years, but I do feel that he is truly enjoying the indoors and enjoying all the love, attention, and all the food he can possibly have. So he's pretty comfortable here, and we can't wait for him to get out and when he's ready for adoption to find that family of his.
Only about 10 of those roughly 70 cats have been deemed friendly and sociable enough around humans to adopt. The rest are going to be returned to the Veneta property. There, I guess, to live out their lives in relative comfort. It's a fairly spacious acreage. And after being medically treated and fixed, we're not apt to see any more litters of kittens coming out of this group. So that's kind of how it all started all those many years ago.
Wait, so just to get this straight, does that mean that the cats that aren't adopted out are... they're just going to be a property full of cats near Veneta?
Pretty much, yeah. It's a no-kill initiative, and they understand that not every cat they're going to be coming that's going to be coming through Green Hill is necessarily going to be socialized enough to interact with humans or even other animals. So, like I said before, it's a pretty wide property, and so I don't know what the eventual percentage or number of cats that'll be returned to the property, but they've got room to grow. And I guess the main thing is just making sure that their numbers don't continue to expand anymore. So you just kind of say in a sense that maybe they've been put out to pasture, I guess, to use another term that comes to mind, is that they'll just live out their lives in a cat colony there that will subsist largely on donated food, and they've got the shelters there set up. So,
wow.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting place. I don't think they're going to keep the property accessible to people outside of those who live and own on it. So I think it'll just be a private cat colony, if you will.
So no wildlife safari drive-through opportunities there?
No, although that would be kind of an interesting venture.
It would.
We've seen some of those cats on your web stories, Brian. If someone wants to adopt one of those rescues, how would they get started?
Green Hill Humane Society is the place of contact. They want to help these cats get their forever homes and will usually have a general sense of their personality and comfort zones. Speaking of comfort zones and personality, who among us besides me has at least one cat?
Me.
Not me.
All right. Well, if you're like me, you know, cats can express affection. But not in the same way as one might see in a dog or human infant. Dogs like to bark, wag their tail, jump up and down, hump your leg. Well, babies, unfortunately, well, babies coo, gurgle, and grab your arm or face. So cats, not so much. They're kind of to the point where it's a common perception that they're aloof, distant, and even snooty compared to these other two groups. Turns out, though, that cats do love their humans and have deep bonds, and science says so, too.
Oh, fine.
So, Brian, I understand this story came out of new research from Oregon State University?
Yes. A researcher named Kristen Vitale and her team interacted with some test subject cats to gauge their levels of security with their human caregivers in a new, strange environment. Here's Vitale explaining the experiment.
So while a secure individual is able to use their owner as that secure base to explore out from, an insecure individual doesn't use their owner in that way. So what that means is that after that owner comes back to the room, instead of, you know, greeting them and then going back to what they were doing like a secure cat would, these cats either will cling to their owner, so that's insecure ambivalence, and that's the idea that instead of going back to their original behavior, they're just clinging, glued to their owner's lap, not really engaging again in that anti-stress behavior that they were previously.
The short of it is cats may be perfectly secure with their owner, and instead of bouncing all over the place and drooling on your chin, may simply rub up against you, or if a bit insecure, sit on your lap. But it's all now empirical evidence that Fluffy thinks you're the cat's pajamas. They're just a bit more reserved with those expressions. It's all in the latest scientific journal, Current Biology.
I think that sounds like fake news.
I believe it.
Fake news.
And my cat does too.
You're just cat people. It's biased media.
You're listening to the Northwest Passage podcast. We'll be right back.
Support for KLCC's Northwest Passage is provided by Columbia Bank. Columbia Bank makes a difference in our community through sponsorship of Lane County organizations and the Warm Hearts Winter Drive, supporting homeless shelters across the Northwest. More information on how Columbia Bank team members give back to Lane County is available at columbiabank.com. Columbia Bank, where relationships rule. Member FDIC.
This is the Northwest Passage on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald with Ani Katz and Brian Bull. Now it's time to talk about something else from this week that has caught your fancy. Brian?
So while it seems like much of the major news is something about President Trump and a call he made to some Ukrainian guy, there are a couple other news items that have slipped through the cracks. First, NASA has come out with a new visualization of a black hole. Now, do not confuse this with an earlier image captured by the Event Horizon Telescope. It's a great achievement, but largely when you look at it, it's a fuzzy orange circle that's been compared to a burning onion ring or a donut. NASA's simulation is an animated close-up of the same phenomenon, and I can see staring at this animation for hours while listening to vintage Pink Floyd or maybe The Hearts of Space. A very good article with the animation can be found on CNET as well as other videos on YouTube, but it's really mesmerizing and really sharp detail, and I think kind of provides you the sense of the denseness of these celestial bodies and just the fact that they draw so much in. So it is certainly a really striking visual. And finally, shoe giant Nike kicked the stock market this week. On Wednesday, it hit a record high with its stock climbing more than 6% in early trading, hitting $92.79 a share. And I guess the previous record was $90 back in April. Nike's revenue was charted at $10.6 billion, and digital sales this year, at last check, were up 42% as well. So Nike is doing very well in the stock market. Wow. Just one of the many things that got a little overshadowed this week.
Hmm. Yeah. I wonder if there's a reason for it, like a new shoe release or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah.
So, Ani, how about you?
Well, I will admit to being a humongous space nerd, so I love the news about the black hole. There are few other things that can make me as giddy as space. One of them is like British aristocracy and the monarchy, really, seriously. So I have not seen the Downton Abbey movie yet. I was a huge fan of the series, and I was out of town last week, so I didn't get a chance, but I will be going this weekend. I'm very excited. Apparently, a crown that the current queen wears sometimes makes an appearance in the movie on the head of the queen in the movie. Not the exact one, obviously. They had to make a replica, but I'm very much looking forward to hanging out with the Crawleys for a couple hours and just immersing myself in that world.
And you can't go wrong with Maggie Smith as the Dowager.
No, ever. Oh, no, none of them. And apparently it did break. It was the top movie at the box office last weekend. So I guess it's good.
It charted at $31.1 million, beating out Rambo Last Blood.
Yeah, see, about to add $10 more to that. So there you go. Also, I will not be seeing Rambo.
You're not a Rambo person?
You have better things to do with my time.
I learn something rather watch new the Queen. Every day about my coworkers.
Well, as many of us look around and realize we survived another week, despite all the troubling news we hear and see, I was happy to hear another edition of NPR's American Anthem series this week.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified, kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how to get along. But now you're back.
It's Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive. So we got to hear a lot more about how this song came about and some of the backstory of this 1978 disco smash. Gloria Gaynor was having a really tough time. Her mother had recently died. Her record label was not going to renew her contract, and she hadn't had a hit in a while. And then she slipped on stage and was badly injured. But she was able to recover from the injury after several months, and then a new president came to her record company who had a different point of view. And I Will Survive was actually recorded as the B-side of a record, and it became a huge anthem, especially for the LGBTQ community and for many others around the world. It's been covered multiple times by artists, and it's one of those songs that you just can't get out of your head.
For some reason, that song played a huge part of my summer camp experience, so shout out to my camp friends. When I heard the opening, you know, that piano, on All Things Considered, I was just so excited to learn more about it, and I didn't know anything about the history of the song. So it's a great piece if you can go on and check it out.
Well, thanks so much, everyone, for joining us for this week's edition of the Northwest Passage. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald.
I'm Morning Edition host Ani Katz.
And I'm news reporter Brian Ball.
Bye.